sometimes we'll approach a shot and, you know, I'm more coming at it from the perspective of like, okay, we're in a yoga studio. I would like this yoga studio to be soothing and look relaxing. And I would like, you know, I want to feel peaceful. And then if you're the photographer or the videographer, to say like, okay, here's how I think we can achieve that.
Welcome to Architecture, Design, and Photography. Today we're speaking with Ellie Alexander. She is a senior designer and art director at Lifetime. And she is also very award-winning from your LinkedIn profile, which I just looked at. Congratulations on all those awards.
Thank you. I saw your connection come through this morning.
Yes. I'm really bad at keeping up with LinkedIn. I never go on there, but apparently it's become a big thing. So
apparently it's a thing.
I should look into that more. So anyways, thank you so much for joining us to talk. And I know Ellie from working with Ellie a lot on the Lifetime clubs, the fitness clubs that we shoot.
Yep.
And I interact with you on the architectural representation of the Lifetime clubs. You guys do kind of a lifestyle video that we always see going on the TVs around the clubs and everything else. But you also have to keep just your simple architectural branding and everything on point. And that's where I come in. We do both photo and video with you guys. So I'd like to talk also, remind me about how you guys utilize video, because that's a little bit of a new thing that photographers are crossing over into doing more of that too. But what do you do as a senior designer and art director for people who don't really know what that means?
What do I do? It's kind of a hybrid role. I mean, it's confusing even for us in the industry sometimes, but depending on where you work, you may have a just designer title, like a traditional graphic designer doing layouts, doing web pages, you know, creating ads, or you might have, as I do, sort of a hybrid art director role, in that just meaning that I work with planning photo shoots and, you know, maybe it's directing an illustrator, or maybe it's working with someone like you to direct a photo shoot. So something that's, creating our creative assets, but it might not be traditional, you know, graphic design. It's more collaboration with other creative creators.
So you have to keep very much an overall branding hat on and say that's nice, but it's maybe not in line with.
Correct. Yeah. It's just, yeah, to kind of be that person there to like guide the in this case, for you and me, photo shoots and video, to just sort of guide it to make sure it's like fitting into our brand aesthetic and our brand direction.
Right.
So, yeah.
So talk to me about the difference in approach between architectural photography and videography compared to lifestyle photography and videography, and how an agency and everything would use those, and how creatively you'd approach them, and as a brand, how you'd use them.
I would say, in terms of the creative approach, one of the more interesting differences I've noticed once I started working in architectural photography with you, because that was the first time I'd ever gotten involved with, you know, just space photography, is that, you know, if you're doing a studio shot or a food shoot, you have much more control of your environment. You can dictate where you can dictate where the light comes from, and you can dictate exactly what things are, and you can move things around, and you can play God a little bit more. And when it comes to architectural photography, like, the space is the space. It is what it is, you know? And so it's more of, it's coming at it instead of from a, what do we want to like create and build from scratch? What do we have? And then how do we make it look beautiful and capture it in the way we want to capture it? So it's almost like, not reverse engineering, but it's kind of a totally different approach than traditional like studio photography.
So it's interesting that typically when I shoot architecture, it's more like the studio environment that you're talking about.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That they clear everything out and, you know, it's like, do what you got to do. But when you're working with a club that's on the millions and millions of dollars of level of not just completing it and then letting a family move in and live, but there is a community that needs to start generating income, and they have like a grand opening. We're always shooting the day of the grand opening and usually the day after. And so the shoots that we do, we're constantly, all right, can we get into the cardio section?
Yeah.
You know, and there's people going through like arranging all the stuff and getting the, you know, the electronics and everything else going. And so it's really interesting to deal with that difficulty of it and but be able to be flexible. And it's a huge asset to work with someone like yourself who's always so positive and upbeat throughout that whole process. I've worked in situations where it's just more anxiety. And I don't you might have a lot of anxiety going on, but on the surface you keep it just like, oh no, it's okay. We're all happy. And that's really nice. But it's definitely interesting to have to deal with that other element of you're there and you have to get what you have to get in that situation. And I hadn't really worked in that type of situation. I had only worked in that once before on a project that we do in Las Vegas years ago, where they would be finishing up the house the day of the shoot. And so it kind of prepared us for that. And so it's always we're ready for that, which is good.
Yeah, I've never worked on a hotel brand, but I've heard it's not dissimilar from that. And that, you know, you kind of, construction is always, you know, up until the wire, and then there's going to be, you know, you're going to hit go, and then it's going to be full of, in the hotel's case, customers, in our case, members and team members. So it's like, okay, how do we get this photo shoot in? You know, right between when the construction is done and when it's going to be like, come to life and be full of people. So yeah, we're kind of like, I say they're like photography ninjas. We're like sneaking in and out of rooms and trying to get the shots, but not get in the way of any like final touches being put on the club and make sure we're in and out before it opens. So yeah, it's like hyper speed art direction in photography, but it's a fun challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also interesting when I have to stop. This is my thing. My new word is it's interesting when, and I find it interesting. I get hooked and caught on words and I keep using them. But anyways, it's interesting to me that the difference in shooting photography to video, that's maybe a good segue, that when we'll always do the setup for a photo first, and we'll just nitpick that to death. And then after we do that, we'll use roughly the same composition, but we have to switch out the lighting and everything else. And it's a little bit more difficult capture in that you don't get a lot of leeway in post-production. So you have to get everything that you get there. And it's always difficult to, all right, we got it. I mean, I remember once we were shooting an entry lobby and we probably waited an hour to get just a 5-second little, you know, entry clip. But with video, compared to photography, how have you found in doing your branding, how have you found the different uses of those and your approach to shooting them?
Well, I don't know if this is interesting to anyone else but me, but the way I find ourselves using them is our photography tends to be used for marketing very specific clubs. Like when we go and we shoot the stills of a space, you know, we were like when we were Rancho San Clemente, those images then go up on the website and they're on the, you know, in the gallery for the Rancho San Clemente club. But when we shoot video, it's interesting, and I'm not sure why this is, but it tends to travel farther and find itself in more, you know, uses. Like our video, you know, the video footage that we shoot is leveraged in investor presentations and, you know, paid media ads for clubs that are opening that haven't yet been open and that we don't have images, you know, obviously of, because they're not built yet. So while our stills have very specific purposes, our videos have much like longer legs. And what was your follow-up question? Sorry.
I didn't know that I had one.
The second part.
How do those translate into social media? Do you use video versus photography differently in social media much? Or
I would say we do use quite a bit more video and social media. It's just simple. The nature of social media, there's, if you, something's moving, it's more likely to kind of catch your eyes. Right. And you can then, I think the other advantage is obviously you can edit together a compilation reel that quickly shows this, that, the other thing. You know, you can kind of get a lot more data into people's eyeballs more quickly than you can using stills, I think.
Right.
So we find ourselves using video a lot more in social media.
So what is the value in a still image, you think, and why does that stay around when video is possible?
That's a good question. I think that it is because the still images, number one, I know print media isn't what it used to be, but it's still a thing. We still run newspaper ads, we still do magazine ads, we still do direct mail. And so we need really beautiful, polished still images for that. And in addition to that, trying to think of how to say this, even just the level of resolution and the attention to retouching that you guys do is critical for when you're doing print marketing, you know, for a billboard. Like if you're, you know, if you're shooting a little video for, you know, an organic social media account, it doesn't really matter if it might be low res or not, you know, retouched as highly because it's never going to be bigger than yay big. But if you know you're going to be leveraging assets, like I said, in, you know, out of home advertising or, you know, a large print piece, you need it to have that quality. And the other thing is the stills tend to, while videos I find are good at being a little splashier, getting attention, getting that like quick hit and getting people to engage quickly, the stills come into play when people are like farther along in the decision process, like on the website. So if they're on the website and they're like, okay, I'm interested in this club, I might want to join, I'd really like to go through and see what it looks like. You know, they're spending a little more time looking through that gallery of stills, or spending a little more time going through that direct mail piece. So they, people sit longer on them than they do on the video content.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. So maybe people pick up on there's a lot more information and a surface level of feel and emotion that you can get from a video, but a still image is something you might sit with a little longer and let your imagination go a little further, kind of like a book to a degree, where you don't have sound and light and picture, but you have words. It's a reduced form, but it makes your mind work a little more,
right? Yeah.
So in photography, in the same way, might be a reduced form, but it makes your mind imagine the movement and passing through that space a little more, where video kind of handles it all. And you don't have to have as much imagination in consuming that imagery.
Yeah. It's like slow and fast.
Yeah.
You know?
You might go 5 minutes long here, but what are the hidden features of a lifetime club?
Ooh, you know I like talking about these. And I got to remember them. I actually haven't, since we're at home, I haven't been in a club for a while, so I have to think back. I love the, especially as a new mom, I now have a 1.5-year-old. There's these special little guards that are built into all the doors.
The hinges with the white thing that comes out?
Yeah, there's like this, it's like almost like a curtain with a screen. And whenever you open and close the door, it opens so that kids can't stick their fingers in and get their fingers pinched in the doors.
Even as an adult, you know, it's kind of like,
I've pinched my finger in a door before, but no, that's probably one of my favorites. Like something you never think of. And you look down, you're like, what is that on the door? What's that strange little thing attached? No, it's a little finger guard.
Right. Yeah, when I describe to people lifetime clubs, you know, they're like, what's the big deal? It's a health club. Right. Like, well, sometimes there's a basketball, you know, gymnasium. Mm-hmm. There's like water slides and there's kids, you know, kid care and a spa. And it's always the young mothers that are like, whoa, wait, what? There's kid care and a spa. I'm in, you know.
Where do I sign?
Yeah.
I think that's probably one of the things that makes the shoots we do there so fun and so like challenging in a good way, is that, you know, in one day we might be going out into a pool deck and shooting like a luxurious pool deck. And then half an hour later, we are in a cycle studio and there's like party lights going and we have to turn on the music to get the sound lights to activate. And it's, you know, like it's like a rave in there. And then 30 minutes later, we're in the spa and it's like, we have candles going and we're, you know, it's very peaceful and there's harp music and then we're in the basketball courts. Like, so it's just all these different ambiances and levels of energy and surroundings. And it makes it pretty fun.
What's your pre-planning, pre-production process before a photo shoot?
For one of these, it's actually, it's less creative and more logistical, especially because we've been working with you for so long that we kind of know how to do these. We've done, I don't know how many of these shoots we've done.
A lot.
At least a dozen maybe.
Oh, geez, more than that. Easy.
I lost track a couple of years. But so we kind of know the drill. Like we know your style, you know my working style, like we have that part down. So the pre-shoot planning is actually more around okay, how many spaces are we trying to get? When might we be able to get the best lighting in those spaces? Even though, unfortunately, you know, we can't always count on being able to get into those spaces during those ideal times. But right. Yeah, it's more about like, okay, what's our plan of attack and how can we be most efficient and move through this club, even coming down to like, I know we've encountered where, you know, the elevators might not be turned on yet. So
poor Corey at that point.
Yeah, it's like if the elevators aren't up and running yet, how do we get our equipment between floors of the building? So maybe we want to shoot everything on the first floor and then go to the second floor, so we're not, you know, wasting our precious, precious time just doing stairs.
Sure.
So
now, what about the creative process in selecting what you are going to shoot from a specific club? Like, what weighs in on, yeah, we should shoot this, but we shouldn't shoot that, and how do you want to see it?
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, I mean, generally what one of the most important things is finding out what's special about that club. You know, we haven't, you know, I won't have gotten to see the construction site or anything beforehand since it's generally, you know, across the country. So it's neat. So we get to meet with the architects. We have all of our architecture is done in house. And so the architects are just, you know, across the building and down the hall from me. So we get to go and sit with them and ask them, like, you know, what unique features are going into this club? What particular parts do you think are going to be the most, you know, awe-inspiring? And what are you most excited about is actually the question that lots of times gets them kind of like, oh, yeah, well, this is this cool feature we're putting in. Like, you know, I love that we did this over here. And there's going to be, you know, even things like talking about a feature they're hanging on the ceiling over the lobby, or trying to think of examples. Like, there's one club where they put in an outdoor sort of like pergola type thing for outdoor workouts. Mm-hmm. That isn't a feature that's commonly seen at other clubs.
Yep.
Rancho
San Clemente, yeah. I think, is where that was.
Yeah. So yeah, finding out what those, like, what are the special things about that club to make sure we get all of those.
Yep. Hey, you remember Chet Williams? He just texted me as we were talking.
Hi, Chet.
So the let's see, I had somewhere where I was going with that other question too, but I'm sure it'll come back. Oh, in shooting working, running around these spaces like we have to, what can a videographer mm-hmm. and a photographer do to make your life easier in that whole process for people who would be listening to this that are going to be working in a similar situation? What are the do's and the don'ts that you want to get out of your photographer, videographer?
That is a great question. I would say do's. I just got a text. I would say can't turn off the world. I would say definitely do's. Like, chime in with your expertise. Because I mean, even though I have experience working with photographers, I am not a photographer. I do not have the technical eye or the degree of eye for lighting and composition that you guys have. I feel like when you're a designer and art director, you have just, it's more of a, you know enough to be dangerous, but we're not an expert. So we think we know a lot, but we don't know as much as you guys. So I know sometimes we'll approach a shot and, you know, I'm more coming at it from the perspective of like, okay, we're in a yoga studio. I would like this yoga studio to be soothing and look relaxing. And I would like, you know, I want to feel peaceful. And then, like, if you're the photographer or the videographer, to say, like, okay, here's how I think we can achieve that. Right. I think we should set up the composition from this side of the room because, oh, there's a lot of clutter on this side and that won't feel peaceful. And the lines of the composition, you know, looking at it this way are very serene, you know. So, yeah, like, help us meet that the emotive objective with your technical expertise and don't be afraid to chime in with it. Like, don't feel like you have to sit back and wait for the art director to say, oh, I want you to put the camera here and I want you to shoot it this way. You know what I'm
right.
We need your guys' help.
I often find that I really enjoy working with people who can place the problem in front of me. So I don't have to find the problem. They define the problem. And then they say, that's our problem. Can you creatively solve that? Check out the hook while my DJ revolves it. Reference from the 90s. So when a lot of times if I go to a home that's been designed and there's very little production along with my team, as far as it's just me and maybe the designer, the difficulty there is that I have to assume your role and say, what is the exciting part about this? What do we want to shoot? So it takes away from what I do as both a aesthetic creative and secondarily as a technician.
Yeah.
So there's you know, very much the bar that you have to clear every time is the technical part. But mm-hmm. the thing you're getting paid for is the creative part.
Yeah.
So there, that's my realm. But as long as I can have someone like yourself who's coming along saying, all right, here's our next problem, keeping us mm-hmm. on task and keeping us focused and you know, putting us back in line where we go out, that's like mm-hmm. such a huge thing to work with that is really great when working with people like yourself. Very much appreciate that.
Thank you. Right back at you.
What are the don'ts? What are some of the experiences you've had? And I'm sure none of them are bad with me, of course.
No, but
anyways,
never.
What are some of the don'ts, like things you've run into that you're like, man, I wish this photographer, videographer didn't do that because it just made my life a little more difficult.
Gotcha. Yeah, the biggest one that comes to mind, and you have never done this, so you can just rest easy.
I have push too many light switches before. I yes. know that.
No touch
the light switches.
I would say one of the biggest don'ts is don't completely like poo-poo a shot, because mm-hmm. I know sometimes, you know, because our images are used for very specific marketing purposes, sometimes we have to shoot an area because it might not be the most beautiful area of the club. You know, it might not be the pool deck, but like, for example, I remember one time we needed to shoot the showers mm-hmm. and it doesn't seem that exciting, but we needed it because like our research has shown that people respond really positively to saying like, oh my gosh, these are beautiful tiled showers. Like they're private. They're not, right. you know, icky.
We're not and in so a group it, shower. Great.
Yeah. So like, even though it might not seem like the most exciting shot, or like, you know, if you look at the whole club, it might not be what you think would rise to the surface. It was really important for our business needs.
It's a great selling point.
Yeah. And so I've worked with photographers in the past who have kind of pushed back on shots like that. Like, I don't understand. Like, no, we shouldn't shoot this. It's like, no, we have our reasons. We need it for XYZ. So to gotcha. Just to work with someone who understands that, you know, there might be some backstory reason about why we need this particular shot, even though if it might not be the most artful one, mm-hmm. sometimes it serves a very important purpose.
Right.
So to not have to, force that level of trust that it's an, you know, right. something that we need to capture. That's my biggest don't.
Yeah, no, that's, I've found when I have opinions on what we're shooting, mm-hmm. I do try, as you say, keep in mind, like if they're asking us to shoot this area, they obviously have a reason why they want it, mm-hmm. but maybe it doesn't look that great. Well, here's where you justify being a better, you know, someone who can charge mm-hmm. more. You're given a lackluster space, make it look great. There's your challenge. You know?
Exactly.
So mm-hmm. that I pick up on that sometimes when shooting for anybody. There'll be mm-hmm. spaces like that that maybe aren't my dream to shoot, but that's you don't get to just pick and choose those kind of things. And sometimes you have to say, all right, the challenge here is creativity. How can we make this the absolute best? And even mm-hmm. inside that process, I'll find that I'll remind myself, hey, you used to make pallets in a factory. Remember that?
Yeah.
Stay on task here and do your best. I'll also think that, like, all right, I'll share my opinion twice at the most, mm-hmm. you know? And if there's a continual, like, yeah, no, this is, we need this, blah, blah, then yeah, fine. I'm a commercial photographer. I'm not there doing fine art to express my vision solely, you know?
So, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, graphic design and communicating emotions. If you might notice, mm-hmm. I've pulled a lot of this from your about page on your website. But talk to me.
I should
about...
have refreshed myself on it before this.
Well, I'll just drop these surprise questions on you. Graphic design and communicating emotions. Like, how do those intersect? Why are they important? How are they useful?
So, I think when it comes to graphic design and communicating emotions, it can be subtle and layered, which is something I find interesting. Like, even if you're just taking, you know, a handful of words and putting them on a page, like at its simplest, you know, at the simplest level, if you put those words in one typeface versus another typeface, people might read them completely differently. Right. You know, if it's in a thick, tightly tracked, dark, bold typeface, people are going to immediately and subconsciously read that as a more strong, assertive, potentially aggressive message.
Isn't that interesting, though, how just those things communicate that? Like, we can't tell you exactly why, but everyone knows it.
There's just those inherent things that we don't even notice that we're doing, but you hear the message in a different voice in your head, depending on how it's presented.
Right.
I mean, it's a lot like, I think about like people and the outfits they wear. You know, if someone walks up to you dressed one way and carrying themselves a certain way, even if they say the same words as another person that, you know, just handles themselves differently, you'll perceive those two messages differently. So,
yeah, it's interesting. I just watched, a while ago, I watched that Netflix documentary, Wild Country. Have you seen
that?
Oh,
yeah. Not for a while, but I have seen it.
It's the, I believe he was an Indian guru that came to the States and started like a cult and
commune type thing.
Yeah, back in the 60s, 70s. And it struck me that like his deal, you know, for one, he presented himself very, how would you say it? Very unique. And like he was not, you know, making pallets in a factory. This guy was unique, you know, and he had the accent, but he'd speak very slow. He'd speak in that, you know, kind of enchanting accent, and he would not break eye contact. And the things he was saying were not that profound, but because he was, you know, had all these trappings, if you put the same guy there who just got off a shift making pallets and gave him a typical American accent, you just, I'm not following this guy.
Be like, whatever.
Washington to go start a cult. Yeah. So it's interesting. Like you dress words up in different font and they do the same thing just through design. And, but it's an amazing, like, it's an amazing separation between the objective words on a page and just what the thickness and curve and whatever of that font does that communicates that emotion.
And then you start layering in, you know, how are you combining it with the imagery? Is the layout open or is the layout tight? Is, you know, there's you can keep layering on the different complexities, and that's just even just like the baseline, you know, it just gets ever more complicated from there. So it's always kind of a fun puzzle.
Is there a level of psychology that they go into in graphic design school for that kind of thing, or?
There should be. No, there is. There definitely is. I honestly, I wish there was more. And I don't know what school has, you know, what graphic design programs have changed and evolved to be like, especially in, you know, like the age of social media that wasn't even that wasn't even around when I went through the graphic design program. But I think it's a fascinating part of it that merits. I wish there was more data on that kind of stuff. I don't even know how you would study it.
Yeah,
and
I remember
things changed so fast.
I remember thinking when I was first in architectural school, there was just a cross section of like a roof that was arced, and so it would draw you to the center. And if it was, you know, the opposite, convex, whatever, it would kind of push you to the sides. And it seems odd to me that they don't do more objective studies of just, all right, here's a space and we send, you know, 100 people through and we take data as far as where they go. And then we do an exit interview of how they felt and blah, blah, blah. And just keep doing that and subtly change things and see how people are affected.
And see how they react. Yeah.
So you get less of you know, wizards behind the curtain designing things and a little bit more of, if we do this, we know this is going to be the reaction, but maybe that takes some magic out of life to a degree. I don't know, but
yeah, I remember, I can't remember where I heard this, but there was, if you look at like Pixar or Disney characters, all the good characters, like the good characters will all have really big eyes because psychologically we perceive that as friendly, and all the bad guys will have teeny tiny little eyes because there's something in humans that just responds to those two things completely differently. So it's along those lines. It's fascinating.
Yeah. That is weird. All right. So, you also had a thing on your about page that I thought was interesting. Making design and ideas extendable.
What does that mean? That's a good question. Getting into the weeds a little bit, but, so like as a, you know, working, especially working in house like I do, you know, I don't work at a big agency. I work for one company. And when we come up with an idea or a design for, you know, a piece or a campaign, we might start with a print ad, but it needs to be something that then, okay, another team can take and translate for web, and another team can take and translate for social media. Mm. And then it can be extended into an email, and it can be, you know, into the challenge of making things, especially in like an age of co-print and co-digital, which our company still does a lot of both.
That's, can you explain what those terms mean?
Which ones?
Co-print and co-digital.
Oh, just having, just like we do direct mail pieces, and then we also might have a corresponding online video ad that are, you know, going to the same people with the same message, but we want to make sure that they visually align and gotcha. Speak the same language gotcha. And look the same so that people make that connection. So just creating things that can live in all those different places and can be extendable into sure. all those different mediums, instead of just being like, oh, well, it works here, but uh-oh, it doesn't work over here. What do we do with it? So right.
How do you feel about working on a single large brand rather than being at an agency where you maybe have to switch hats for different mm-hmm. branding kind of thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm at a single company. I prefer that. I found that when I was at an agency, and not there's anything wrong with being an agency, but for me personally, I didn't feel connected to the companies that I was, you know, working for. Mm. You know, we were like essentially a contractor, and so I just didn't have that emotional investment in, you know, the food product I might be marketing or this, you know, hotel brand. It sure. just felt, I felt more just like an more outside of it. And then the first time I worked in house, I found so much more like personal fulfillment and passion when I was like, no, this is my company, you know, like these are my, you know, you feel like you're more part of the team as opposed right. to just like, oh, a contract. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I like
yeah.
feeling like you're all in it together and having that camaraderie of right. working in house.
Okay. So your love of refining, I'm mm-hmm. just going right down mm. the list of your great points that make great questions.
So. Oh God. I really should have looked at them. That more just means like, sometimes in, you know, as a graphic designer, we might have to do the same thing kind of over and over again. You know, we might run the same type of ad or, you know, do the same treatment, or maybe it's an ongoing newsletter or something. And so one of the things that I like, and I think you do get this opportunity more when you work in house as opposed to at an agency, is that we can then look at those and continually make them better. Like whether it's because we're getting insights mm. from our marketing partners, they're like, oh, you know, X, Y, and Z aren't working. How can we solve it? Or whether it's from a production angle, like, oh, okay, well, we made it this way last time, but that took a really long time. And maybe there's a way we can do it at the same level of quality, but faster. Or, you know, maybe something just after a while, we're like, you know what, this aesthetically doesn't really hit the mark. We feel like we could do it a little bit better. So I just really dig being able to continue to like refine and elevate and iterate.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. So talk to me about photos then, that you have that kind of unique opportunity to be in a company that you have your hand in producing a lot of the photos and videos, but then you also mm-hmm. see how those photos and videos perform. So you yeah. get the data on them and you refine them to continually, well, when I do this again, I want to make sure I do this because that connects well with our audience or our mm-hmm. market. What are the kind of markers of things that you found that work really well in photos and video?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think interestingly enough, one of the things that, and if anyone from Lifetime watches this, they're gonna be like, yep, I know exactly what you're talking about, is that we hear time and time again that the exteriors of the buildings perform really well, which like, I feel like sometimes, I know you're making the face that we always kind of make. It's like, really? What? I mean, it's just the outside of a building. Like
right.
your gut doesn't, I feel like a lot of times your creative instinct is right. You know, you like, you can look at something and be like, yep, that's, I think people are gonna respond to this or people aren't, but then sometimes there's surprises. And the exterior of our buildings is one of those, like we hear time and time again, the results always show, you know, if we run a photo of the exterior of the building next to a photo of the locker room, the front of the building wins. And right. it's, I don't understand the psychology of it. I want to, maybe it's because it's big and epic and attention getting. I'm not sure, but
I'd imagine if I'm personally looking at information like that, I would see, you know, there'd be more, for one, they're just, it's a bigger expanse.
Yeah.
There's probably some blue sky, some nice dynamic lighting. Mm-hmm. And in the photo, you wouldn't feel like, if I'm comparing it to a locker room, you're not going to feel as like I'm in a locker room space. To me, a locker room image comes later, where I remember going into the locker rooms of Lifetime for the first time and I was like, whoa, they're really doing this, you know?
Yeah.
But as a photo, even when it's that nice, it's not the emotion of just the the blank emotion of like an exterior that's nicely lit and expansive.
And the sun's rising and you're shooting it from a kind of heroic angle. And
That's interesting. That mean we're going to be shooting more exteriors or?
Probably.
So in your estimation, why should we be making things more simple?
Oh, so making things more simple, just like in general?
I mean, in general, in life and in graphic design and in photography and in your business practices and design, you know, just the
everything.
Whole thing.
Okay. Let me think. So making things more simple. I don't know. Like, simple is almost always better. It's,
but why?
Yeah, but why?
I mean, because the Baroque period had its merit.
That's true. That's true.
And that was anything but simple.
So from a marketing perspective, I think especially, I keep going back to like social media. I've been working a lot on social media lately, and at least simple when it comes to messaging and not overcomplicating. So I guess when I say things should be simpler, I don't mean like minimalist. I feel like I heard a quote somewhere about graphic design that said things should be as simple as possible, but not simpler, or something along those lines.
Right.
Like, I don't advocate for just, you know, stripping things away to minimalism, but being strategic. So when it comes to design, being strategic about what you include. So like, is this visual flourish, let's say, that I'm adding on a design, does that add something? If it adds something, if it adds a feeling of, like you're saying, like Baroque, if it adds a feeling of ornamentation and luxury, then it serves a purpose and it belongs there. But I think, like, especially as like designers, sometimes we get caught up trying to like make a pretty thing, you know, and it's fun. We like what we do. We want to design this element over here and put this cool thing here. And sometimes it's just, sometimes those things get in the way of communicating a message, even though they might be beautiful. Like we were saying earlier, like we're both in like the commercial creative industry, not the self-expression. So yeah, it's not to say that there isn't a place for things that are ornamental or complicated or layered, or it's just that they have to be carefully selected and crafted so that they enhance any message or feeling instead of distracting from them.
Right. Yeah. I find that as an architectural photographer, I lean towards minimalism, but I don't want to, you know, force that on anybody, but it's definitely, I go that direction naturally. But that some people's work that I've seen has a level of complexity and kind of, to a degree, running around shouting as far as way more lighting and kind of special technical things going on that don't need to be going on, that make it more about the photograph than the space.
Yep.
So it's very important to me that when someone looks at an image that I've taken, that they connect with the space and recognize that and feel that, rather than the photograph. It's a, they're two different things. And so it's a very subtle thing to layer your creativity on top of something else, you know?
I think that's a good distinction too. Cause yeah, like I can sort of, as we're talking about that, I could picture some images I've seen of different spaces where there's so much going on and there's so many lighting techniques that your eye is just jumping all over. Like, oh, there's, you know, there's that thing on the over there on the counter, and then there's this window, and then there's this couch, and you just like you're absorbing, trying your mind and your eye are trying to absorb so much that you're not able to just like absorb the gist. Like, what is the gist of the space? What do I feel looking at this space? Not can I identify all these little elements?
A good kind of touchstone I've found is thinking, where in the space is the person viewing this image wanting to place themselves? Mm-hmm. You know, and just a simple thing as far as like, if it's a shot of one of the locker rooms placing a towel, knowing mm-hmm. that, all right, that person's going to be drawn to that mm-hmm. red herring. No, not red herring. There's something that there's some term about, you know, putting something in something to draw people to specifically that thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, so you had mentioned social media. What in working on that more recently, what's your approach or any epiphanies you've had around social media or thoughts on that?
Ooh, that it's fun.
How so? Why?
I think it's interesting to work on social media because I think in my, you know, just previous iterations of my job, we've been working more on the creative is more directed at, okay, here's a list of, you know, here's a list of attributes or piece of information we need to convey. You know, how can we give people all this content? Like a website's a great example. Like, okay, we want people to be able to, you know, we want people to be intrigued, but then we want them to be able to absorb, you know, the hours and the list of amenities. You know, like there's much more set in stone, I guess. And when it comes to social media, it's a little bit simpler. And oftentimes the goal is just to entertain or to give people, you know, what's something that they would enjoy reading about or what's something that they would enjoy watching. It's not as, we need them to know X, Y, and Z, and then we need to click on this link. And it's an opportunity. And not that there's anything wrong with any of that. It's just right. that it's an opportunity to be a little bit more like serving the viewer as right. opposed to, okay, we're trying to communicate something. What are we trying to say? It's like looking at it from a little bit of a different perspective. And it's just more casual, which is kind of interesting. It was actually a struggle for me at first as a, you know, a designer on like a luxury premier brand. You know, we try to be very, very, you know, buttoned up.
Right.
And because that's our brand. So it was kind of an adjustment for me to just, you know, how do we loosen things up on social media a little bit? Because like that's, you know, it's more person to person communication, but we don't want to not be us. So right. like walking that line between casual and still professional right. has been an interesting like scale to start learning to weigh.
Right. I'm having there was some shoot somewhere in the US that we were doing that was at like 11:30 at night. And after we had done the video pass of the locker room, I was like, there's a gap over there and I could have the camera go across and I could run through there really quick and it'd be hilarious. But yeah, it, you know, obviously that's a little too far off brand, but there, I like humor.
Yeah. That I saw that clip on your account, I think. And I literally LOL'd at that one. That one was because you had this funny like run, you like punched over.
Yeah, it was
like
kind of a Sasquatch kind of thing going on. Yeah.
Like that.
Right. Another question here that we kind of already covered, but when you're looking for a photographer to work with, what are some of the key attributes that you'd look for?
Hmm. One that just pops to mind is, when we're looking for a photographer to work with, we also have some in-house photographers, but when we need to go outside, we'll generally, you know, have a phone call to kind of get to know them at first, and just, a level of confidence in speaking about what they do and the techniques. And, you know, I just recall a little while ago, we had a couple different calls with different photographers and they all did a great job, but one in particular really stood out because of his ability to just convey to us that he knew what he was doing. He had this under control. You know, that he would make our lives easier.
Right.
to simplify it. So yeah just a level of confidence and kind of self-assurance is actually a really big, you know, beyond style, I mean, and skill, obviously there's that part, but once you get further down the pipeline, that was a really big decision maker in that instance.
Yeah, that's how does someone communicate that in a phone conversation? That's that's an interesting thing. I did a podcast with a communications person. I'll have to go back and listen to that one again. Yeah. What is the utility of an image for a graphic designer in your situation? Like what, when you're shooting something, do you have a first use in mind? And then in the back of your mind, are you thinking, oh, we could also use it for this and this and that and this?
100%. And sometimes it's easier to accomplish than others, but yeah, I think like a good example is even just crops. You know, when we're shooting our photography, I think we always look at a very horizontal crop first, because that's the first place our photos are going to go. Is they're going to go in the gallery of that club location page, and we want to make sure it'll look great in that context. But then it's, you know, okay, well, would it also look good cropped square? And because we might want to use this on social. Yep. And I think in our instance, like since we, you know, like we talked about earlier, like the space is the space, you can't change the space. So I think that comes a little less into play with what we do. But like we were doing a food shoot the other day, and we made sure that from the get-go, since that was something we could highly control and, you know, put the glasses where we wanted them and put the food where we wanted it, that we had that all planned out. Like, okay, literally like here's on the screen, here's how it's going to crop in a social media story, right, and here's how it's going to crop. So, yeah.
How do you approach food shoots? I've never, I have shot food like once or twice because it was part of the, like we were shooting a restaurant and they're like, oh, hey, can we, you know, I'm not a food photographer by any stretch, but I know that there's like when you bring in a food stylist, sometimes they'll work behind a curtain and no one can see because there's all these tricks and stuff. How is that working with a food photographer in that process?
It's pretty fun. It's completely different ballpark. Like the more and more I've worked in my industry, it's so interesting to see like how different areas of photography are, or types of photography, and what goes into all of them. I remember the first time I went to a food shoot, I walked in, I was like a 19-year-old intern, and I walked in and there was a woman, the food stylist had a pair of tweezers about this long, and she was arranging tortilla chips in a giant bowl of tortilla chips.
Wow.
To like make sure it was like a nice pile of tortilla chips. So that I was just like, where am I and what is happening? Like there's a woman arranging chips with tweezers. Like what is going on?
Yeah.
But yeah, I love food shoots. And I think one of the things, I don't know why this popped into my head, but one of the more interesting things I think about when I'm working on food shoots is if you're not going off a specific recipe, to consider the color palette of the food that you're working with, even if it's not in the recipe, because, you know, a lot of recipes or a lot of food is white or brown, you know? So if you don't, sometimes you have to get clever with ways you can bring color into things, you know, whether it's just additional propping or is there some sort of garnish, but like just getting especially green tones and blue tones into a photo that might inherently just be like green colors and tans and browns is a really just a little thing that can really take something from a pretty good food picture to a really good food picture.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of like an architectural shoot like you would experience when you have control over the space, where you're like, all right, we got to move that, you know, that coaster just a tiny, and now we're going to move this just, as my youngest son would say, just a teens. I don't know where he picked up teens, but
teens. Yeah,
just a teens. And then last thing I have on here is, how is an image most useful to you, if that really is much different than the last question, I don't know, but
how is an image most useful?
If you have to put it in 1,000 words, as the saying goes.
I think to steal a line from, I think this was a Liz Lemon, I hope I'm getting this right, but I think it was a Liz Lemon line, I want to go to there.
Oh,
from
right.
30 Rock. I think she said that in 30 Rock. So when it comes to at least like, especially the images that you and I work on, our architectural photography, like, does it make someone go, yeah, I want to go to there? I kind of like say that in the back of my head. So if Liz Lemon wants to go there, then we're good.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to go over what you do and your thoughts on stuff and sharing that with a bunch of other people, hopefully a ton of other people that always listen to this, I imagine. So.
Well, no, thanks for having me. I hope my answers made some sort of sense and weren't just rambling nonsense, but I appreciate the opportunity to ramble the nonsense nevertheless.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. How's the weather out there in Minnesota lately?
Not bad. Not bad.
Yeah, we've been in the actually, 50s and 60s, and we were out on a boat yesterday. So,
yeah, we're about the same. This is like this is our golden period. So I'm sure the same for you guys. So,
yeah, I think our first mosquitoes came out just the other day. So I was like, I got to make a screen now for that porch.
So it begins.
Yeah, basically. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time, and hopefully we'll see you soon and be in some other Midwestern or West Coast or East Coast or South City, Houston, who knows? Soon. So.
Sounds good.
All right, great. Thanks
so much.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.